This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Whatever you want. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here tonight in the studio, you've got Ian.
Greg from New York.
And Jay.
We are going to get into a little bit more international news. I know, Greg, you wanted to cover something going on with multiple countries around the planet and some issues with financial supplies like dollars or whatever. We'll get into that coming up here in a little bit and what that means maybe for those of us here in quote-unquote the United States. I know Jay would take issue with that, but we'll get into all of that coming up here in moments. But speaking of those getting out of the United States, we talked extensively, I think it was Tuesday night, on Tuesday's Free Talk Live, about the latest news in Texas, where the Texas Nationalist Movement, which is the most, I think, well-known of Texas independence movements, probably one of the most well-known independence movements on the planet right now, one of their friendly state representatives in the Texas legislature has put forward a bill that I don't know if it's a carbon copy, but it seems very similar to a bill that had happened in 2021 that unfortunately I don't think made it out of committee at the time. And we spoke on this topic for probably two solid hours on the show because there's a lot to cover. We got into kind of some of the history of what's been going on there in the Texas Nationalist Movement. We talked about what happened the last time around and what the plan is this time around with the proposal, as I understood it. And now Daniel Miller is joining us here from Texas Nationalist Movement. Welcome, Daniel.
Hey, Ian, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. The proposal, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that if this thing passes this time around, that it would have to pass, of course, the Texas legislature. And would it have to be signed by the Texas governor in order to pass?
Yeah, it works pretty much just like any other piece of legislation here, you know, with the exception of constitutional amendments. It has passed by a majority of both houses, governor's signature. And then what the bill does is pretty straightforward. If it gets through all the way, then what you're going to have in November of this year will be Texans being able to go to the polls and vote on the question, should the state of Texas reassert its status as an independent nation?
This would be 2024, right, if this passes?
No, it would be in November of this year.
2023. So, oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, so we have a true part-time legislature, right? They meet for 140 days every other year. So in a legislative year, in the year where there's a legislative session, there is essentially a vote in November of that same year for any constitutional amendments that are passed.
Okay.
So because the vote is already going to take place related to constitutional amendments, that's when we set it so that it would be revenue neutral. It would absolutely have zero cost whatsoever to have the vote.
So just to be clear, this is not a constitutional amendment. This would be what's called a referendum, which is essentially, isn't that basically just a statement? It's not like binding. The state legislature doesn't have to actually do anything about this, does it?
Well, yeah. Also included in the bill is if the measure comes back in the affirmative, you wind up with a joint legislative committee that sits immediately and has a one-year timeline to go through and develop the plan, deal with the issues that spring from it, the constitutional issues, statutory issues, international covenants, treaties, and agreements, and finally the negotiated issues.
Okay, that's interesting because I didn't know that there was a time limit. I hadn't read the whole two-page thing or whatever, but I didn't realize the committee was actually time-limited because one of our complaints about this was, oh, great, you're going to turn this over to a bunch of politicians and bureaucrats. They're going to take 10 years to figure out anything about this.
Yeah, you know, look, it was always a concern. So when we created the first draft several sessions back, We had language in there that would have, it mandated the governor to call a special session. I mean, there were some things that we ultimately wanted that panned out to be unconstitutional. You can't, by statute, require the governor to execute what is a discretionary constitutional function, right? So, but Ian, let me get back to the issue of binding versus non-binding, right? There's a lot of people that seem to be really kind of honed in on, is this binding or is this not binding? What people really need to understand is that, to an extent, it is binding as the statute is written. From a practical perspective, it's about as binding as you can get. You know, you have to think, if you look back at the last 100 years, and the average voter turnout for independence referendums is about 85%. So knowing where Texas sits in the polls right now, that would put somewhere in the neighborhood of about 8.5 to 9.2 million pro-Texas voters through that election. Now, the one thing that bears out when you look at independence referendums around the world is those people don't vote for something and then go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to see it through. They want to make sure that their vote gets done about it. They want to make sure that it happens. And so you start doing the math and you realize that that number of pro-Texas voters moving through the polls is actually more than all of the votes cast for all gubernatorial candidates in the last governor's race. So you essentially
run that number by me one more time.
Okay, which part? There were a lot of numbers.
The number about the bigger than the gubernatorial race. Just rephrase that for me just so I make sure I followed what you said there.
Yeah, so a little bit of Texas math. So we know that around the world, independence referendums over the last 100 years have had an average of 85% voter turnout.
Okay. So like Brexit, for instance, that kind of thing?
Yeah, Brexit was a bit of an underperformer. The Scottish independence referendum came in right about 85%. Okay. I mean, it was right there. But 85% is the average voter turnout. So, you know, you look at the fact that Texas has about 17 million registered voters.
Mm-hmm.
Polling shows that Texas comes in at 60% at this point. So we know that that's going to put us, depending on voter turnout, where we are above or below that number, somewhere between 8.6, I think it was, to 9.2 million Texas voters,
okay.
Right? People that vote for Texas.
Got it.
Well, even on the low number, that's more votes for Texas than all votes cast for every single governor candidate in the last gubernatorial race.
Wow. Okay.
So essentially what it does.
By how much? I'm just curious. Like by like a half a million, by a million? Like what? By how
yeah,
much?
You're by about a half a million.
Not bad.
Somewhere in that ballpark.
All
yeah.
Right.
So, you know, the one thing that we know about this issue is that it energizes a lot of voters that have essentially been on the sidelines.
Sure.
Right. They've either been
disenfranchised. It's a vote that can make a difference. I mean, but voters are so sick and tired, I would hope, of the same old choices between big government candidate A versus big government candidate B. Whether they got an R or a D next to their name doesn't matter because they know things are going to get worse. But when they can actually go and vote on something that can dramatically increase their freedom, I think you're right. I think they're going to show up.
Well, look, you know, we talk about it all the time that this is effectively the vote that can break the back of the political establishment. You know, that cartel of, career politicians that hold everyone hostage.
Yeah.
People have been disenfranchised, whether they have been disenfranchised by the choices that they've been given or they've disenfranchised themselves by checking out. The one thing that is absolutely clear across all of these is, you know, that 85% average voter turnout means that the votes like this, where you're voting for issues of fundamental self-governance, they turn people out, and
mm-hmm.
people want to have a say in how they in how they're governed, and ultimately they want to have a say in writing their own destiny.
Well, you talked about the cartel. I mean, those are the people, the current people that are in charge and the people that want to be in charge of the power structures there. Those are the ones that are rolling out the guns to fight this thing already. I've seen some of the posts. I forget the character's name, but some Jeff character up there. I don't know if he's like a state rep or whatever the hell he is. But he's going all out. I'm sure he's not the only one. What kind of opposition are you seeing? Is the mainstream media freaking out on this down there already?
Yeah, and the one you're talking about is a state rep named Jeff Leach. I mean, he's running around like his hair's on fire.
Leach?
I mean,
the guy's name is Leach, and he's a state rep.
Oh, yeah.
That's perfect. You can't write this stuff.
I know, right? I mean, it's like straight
out of the fantasy. The name always fits.
So, yeah. But you know, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, it's the same old cast of characters. You know, it's the guys like Jeff Leach, but he's been probably the most vocal.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the other thing that we've got to contend with is what all independent referenda typically have to deal with, and that's a media that is a bit slanted against, you know, especially in these modern days. You know, the Project Fear folks. I mean, you know, you go look at the media that has come out. There've been some odd 2,200 some odd articles. News stories that have hit about this, and it's all the same refrain, right? Texas versus White, you know, that Supreme Court case said that it's not possible, you know, that sort of nonsense. And the challenge is that they don't want anyone like us who, you know, obviously here in Texas, we have the most experience with this issue.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to get the opposite viewpoint. You know, they drag out some desiccated academic, some third-rate adjunct professor from Bug Tussle Community College to come in and declare that it's unconstitutional for us to have a voice, and they don't want a rebuttal when we've got the world's foremost expert on independence referendums batting for our team. So, you know, it's the same old thing that we have to contend with. But look, we're comfortable going and dealing with this in a total retail politics way, marketing. Block walking, phone banking, peer-to-peer. I mean, we're pulling out all the stops. We're doing this the standard retail politics way. And, you know, our people are so excited they're ready to charge the gates of hell with a squirt pistol.
I love it. I think Greg from New York here has a – you got a question for Daniel Miller?
Yeah, no, I'm fascinated. This is I live in New York, so, you know, secession is obviously the –
It's not on the table.
I think Staten Island talked about seceding from New York. That's about it.
By the way, before you get to the question, the Texas Nationalist Movement, you can check out their website. It's tnm.me. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah. So I had a question because I've seen so many times this lead to an escalation in violence. Bangladesh declared independence from Pakistan. That led to a horrific war of genocidal rape campaigns, systematic and so on, in which, by the way, the United States supported Pakistan's genocidal rape campaign. Well, they didn't support that campaign, but they supported Pakistan's integrity. So there was a civil war fought in the United States to preserve the Union, right? And my question is, like, my worry, and I just want to know what you think about it, is that there seem to be these great powers, right? Or these big governments with armies. And, if you know Texas, all the way through California, through Nevada, everything used to be Mexico. And then the United States just took that territory from Mexico in a war against Mexico, in the Mexican War. I think it was like 120 years ago. So my point is, these territories seem to belong to one country or another, like Catalonia belongs to Spain, and they have their referendum, and then they just Spain arrested all the people who made this, they quote, illegal referendum. I think the people's opinion has to be heard. We should allow people to determine self-determination, right? But the big governments, the countries of the world, the UN is composed of them. They don't want to fall apart. They don't want to see people, the pieces fly off. So what are you concerned about violence escalating if indeed this goes forward and proceeds and, you know, something happens and Texas declares independence?
Well, it's a great question. And I'll just address really two things in what you talked about. You know, one of the things that is abundantly clear about independence movements around the world is that, you know, to paraphrase Mark Twain, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. You know, the fact is no two of these independence movements is exactly the same, you know, and you can take Catalonia is a great example. And, you know, we probably don't have enough time to, you know, either all the nuance of what happened in Catalonia. But, you know, you also have to remember, you know, the Spanish central government is what, 50 years out of fascism? I mean, you know, that's not very long. And they still have some centralist tendencies. Plus it gets into some of the issues about the Catalonian process and things of that nature. But, you know, the point here is that we're in a very different time and every one of these is a very different situation. And when we talk about independence movements here among the states of the United States, we're in a very different time than we were the last time the federal government decided that it wanted to use force to keep the union together. You know, we're talking about what is essentially a process that has been developed over the last 75 years where self-determination has been the norm, you know, where, you know, you see these independence referendums more and more and more. And let's not forget that you had the United States effectively send our grandfathers and grandmothers, our fathers and mothers, some of the people that are listening here, and our sons and daughters off to fight, bleed, and die, allegedly for the right of self-determination for other people. So there is a bit of history here, and you know, I go back to the news clip that was playing a moment ago about Hong Kong and China. What we're essentially saying is if the United States were to use force, they are effectively and ideologically no different than the Communist Chinese Party or Bashar al-Assad in Syria or the dictator in North Korea. And then I think for freedom lovers, the question answers itself. But I want to get to the second part about the Civil War aspect of this. What we have seen more often than not is this trend toward decentralization, self-determination, and self-government has been the mechanism to avoid bloodshed. And I think the poster child for that is probably how dividing essentially ended a 30-year civil war in Sudan. As a matter of fact, you know, Dr. Matt Courtrip, the gentleman that I mentioned earlier, who has been working on these issues, worked on the Sudanese split. So he's been advising us. And so process matters. But I think it's important for us to understand how important it is for us here to acknowledge the fact that if we continue down the path that we're on, violence is probably going to be the fixed position. When you have people with radically different worldviews trying to be held together by a central government and a central system, they must increase control to keep those people together to essentially tamp down violence. And what gets sacrificed there is personal liberty. You know, you saw it in Iraq with Saddam Hussein as a strong man who kept the Shia, the Sunni, and the Maronites from killing one another. We're seeing internal stresses here inside this political and economic institution called the United States of America that haven't been seen since 1850. So my admonition to everyone is if you want to avoid war, if you want to avoid bloodshed, if you want to avoid violence that comes from forcing people with radically different worldviews to live together, then you have to begin to explore allowing states to withdraw from this political and economic union and become self-governing independent nations.
That's a great answer. Is that the number one question, the question of fear of civil war that you get? I mean, you've been doing this for 30 years, roughly, advocating for Texas independence. And would you say that's the biggest question, the most common?
Oddly enough, no.
Really?
I mean, it is a bit of a threat, you know, from the opposition. I refer to it as fear porn. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, what if the United States military invades? What if Mexico invades? What if China invades? What if the Martians invade? You know, but it's still not the number one. People, by and large, people want to know how the process can work so as to minimize disruption in their personal lives. That's really what they want. You know, they want mm-hmm. independence, and they know that they may have to give up some things, or things may be, you know, with all things where freedom is concerned, right? You give people responsibility, and they have to become responsible. But you know, they want to understand how this process can work and avoid all these things. But really and truly, the question that we get the most is how soon can we get this done?
Mm. Wow. I mean, I definitely hear pretty common people have questions about, like, Social Security payments, and that one's pretty easy to answer because people from the United States that move out of the U.S. still get Social Security payments if they got a bank account or whatever. So that one's pretty easy to sort of wipe off the table. And then, of course, another one is, well, what about traveling? What about, you know, am I going to have to get a passport to go to Massachusetts or go to Oklahoma? That sort of thing. You get that one a lot?
We do, you know, again, it's not as often, but you know, the fact of the matter is that the answers to all these questions are really rooted in understanding the dynamics of the existing situation. You know, the travel question is a good example of that. You know, most people don't realize while there's a massive focus on sort of the border crisis and illegal immigration, things of that nature. Most people don't realize that there are about 1.5 million legal border crossings between the United States and Mexico every single solitary day,
mm-hmm.
using nothing but what's called a border transit card, right? So you have examples around the world where people can travel between self-governing independent nations that have prearranged agreements, and the citizens can freely travel without having to show papers or mm-hmm. anything of that nature. So, you know, there are already examples or policies that are in place that answer so many of these questions that people have, but it gets down to a fundamental misunderstanding of the way that the world works is where these questions are rooted. So, of course, a lot of what we have to do is educating people on the way things are.
And while I have you here, I have the other question, sort of as a libertarian, I, you know, view governments as, you know, just a bunch of people who happen to be elected or, you know, ruling that particular state or federation. And so to me, it's just like a layer, like, you know, the flag of the United States or the Texas, right, mm-hmm. State flag. These are like, this is my question. What do you get if you become independent? How much materially different is, what exactly is the upshot of it? What do you benefit from it? In my opinion, as a libertarian, I'll just say, I would love to see a world where you're not bundling the flag and the roads and the electricity and the whatever together, right? You're basically saying that every year my neighborhood can decide to get a new provider of electricity, a new provider of police, a new provider of roads, and so on. And because there's not a binary choice, no one has to go to war over it. It's more like, okay, well, if you don't do a good job for us, we'll get someone else. So if Texas becomes its own country, what benefits? Can you, make the pitch and articulate what is the benefit and what really changes for the people?
Let's just take the example that you just laid out, and let's kind of pull it back to a 30,000-foot view. You know, as people that are, you know, let's say that you're living in Texas and we're having this conversation. And as Texans, we come to terms and say, you know what, your idea is the absolute best way to handle it. If 100% of Texans right now decided to agree with your position on this, understand that it could be overridden, at the stroke of a pen by some unaccountable, unelected federal judge, one of those 2.5 million unelected federal bureaucrats, or an executive order from the Oval Office, or a decision made by a bunch of people you didn't elect in Congress pushing policies on you that you don't want.
Daniel, can you hang with us and stick with us for at least, you know, maybe the rest of the hour if you have time?
Sure.
All right, because I want to make sure you have a chance to answer that question in full. It's a big question. What are the benefits? Lay it out there. Let's get the pitch on independence for Texas. I mean, it seems obvious to me. You cut away all this bureaucracy, all the evil, all the warmongering. You're no longer responsible for that. Well, let's see what Daniel has to say here in a moment. And your thoughts are welcome on Free Talk Live.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, silverlungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
USA News Update. Alec Murdoch's attorneys are filing a notice of appeal following his double murder conviction. Murdoch, a prominent and once wealthy South Carolina attorney, was given two life sentences for the murders of his wife and youngest son in 2021. Norfolk Southern CEO Alan Shaw says the company plans to invest more money into the areas affected by the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Shaw also says they'll stick with the communities for as long as it takes. East Palestine resident Jamie Koza says getting help has been hard.
I know he says how much money is given to the community members, but what he's not telling you is when we go to the assistance center, we have to fight for that money.
A warmer atmospheric river is taking aim at a snow-weary California. Rain is expected to pound the Sacramento Valley today through Friday with heaviest downpours overnight. Dave Collins, USA News.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Live. You can join the show here. You can bring up anything you want to talk about. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here in the studio with you tonight, you've got Ian.
Greg from New York.
And Jay.
And we have, we're going to have Daniel Miller back on the line with us here shortly. I've invited him over onto Jitsi, which is a handy little voice and video conferencing system that just sounds a lot better. We had him on for the whole first segment of this hour talking about independence. Daniel, are you with us?
I'm here.
Oh, loud and clear. Sounds almost like you're sitting here.
A lot better, right?
Yeah, almost like you're sitting in the studio with us. So we've been talking to you about the latest big news out of Texas independence, and that is that there's a bill that's been put in that has, once again, going to be putting forward its HB 3596, and it's hopefully, if it passes through the Texas legislature, is going to go onto a ballot, and it will ask the people of Texas a referendum question, which is, should the state of Texas reassert its status as an independent nation? Now, we've got Jay Noon and I are here regularly on Thursday nights, but Greg from New York, who is a longtime caller of the show here for the last decade or so on Free Talk Live, he comes up from time to time to visit. And so he's fresh out of New York City, and you know, maybe he doesn't know a whole lot about independence movements per se, and he had a question. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Greg, but let me try to recap this, and you can tell me if I got it right. Greg's just wondering, like, what's the benefit? I mean, you know, how are the people of Texas going to see immediate benefits from independence from the United States? Did I get that right, Greg?
Yeah, pretty much. And I know sometimes here on the show you guys talk about Governor Sununu and how, you know, they take advantage of their power. So,
oh, yeah, he's a bad guy. There's no doubt about it. And I suspect the Texas governor is also a bad guy. So what do you say about that?
Are you trading one government for another? Like what? Yeah, what
one tyrant for another? Go ahead, Daniel.
Well, okay. I mean, so to take your example, currently in this situation, we have both tyrants, right? And so, you know, from that perspective, why have a layer of government that you don't need? You know, here in Texas, you know, and this is what we were talking about before the break. If 100% of us agreed on an issue, it could be overridden by the federal system, right? And so what that effectively does for us is it takes potential solutions off the table. It's been my contention for many years that we've never had any legitimate policy discussions on anything that is substantive, because the federal government is always the 800-pound gorilla in the room. You know, two sessions back, we did a study of all the legislation filed here in Texas, and we found that 41% of all bills mentioned the federal government in some way, whether it was a federal law, federal regulation, a federal court case, a federal agency, federal dollars, I mean, whatever it was. And so what that meant was that half of our legislation almost was being written by a bunch of reprehensibles in Washington, D.C., 2.5 million unelected bureaucrats, unaccountable, unelected federal judges, or K Street lobbyists. So, you know, you want to talk about what the immediate effect is. Well, the immediate effect is we actually get control over our own destiny. You know, if you want people to be responsible, give them responsibility. If you want them to be irresponsible, you take responsibility away. Right now, the federal government is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. They suck all of the oxygen out of every conversation that we have. They take all the attention of the electorate. And so what happens is at a state and local level, these guys can get away with murder practically because all of the attention is drawn to that circus sideshow in Washington, D.C. You take that out of the equation. Now, all of a sudden, as an independent nation, there's no more outside money flowing into our elections, right? Everything begins and ends at our borders. Our decisions get to be our own. Our money gets to stay here and be our own. I mean, there are a tremendous amount of effects. So, you know, for folks like yourself or myself or others out there that have an idea of how they want government to work or not work, or they have policies that they want to see, the best way you make that happen is you take the federal government out of the equation.
I like it. It's very inspiring. And I'm someone who has built a software to try to get everyone to have their own currency. So I just want to say, even if you guys don't actually get de facto independence politically, you could start your own currency, the Texas currency. And I think there's nothing illegal about that.
That's a great idea. Get started on this early. Go ahead.
Well, I was about to say, as a matter of fact, several sessions back, we worked on a piece of legislation called the Texas Gold Depository Act. And effectively what it did, of course, the headline that everybody grabbed was that Texas was, quote unquote, getting its own Fort Knox. Right. But that really wasn't the takeaway that everyone should have had. It was the provision in the bill that said that the comptroller had to establish a system of electronic transaction denominated by deposits of precious metals in the depository. So, you know, we're already moving that direction. But to your point about if we don't get political independence, we should work on our economic independence. Understand that Texas is not just a hope, wish, or a dream. It's an inevitability at this point. The arrow left the bow when we founded the organization dedicated to political advocacy. We were polling in single digits when we founded the organization in 2005. Now, the good news is that we always polled higher than the approval rating of U.S. Congress. those guys generally poll somewhere, you know, right above or below leprosy, right? So that's not exactly a gold standard. But, you know, we're at a point now where we've got between 60 and 66% of likely voters that will vote for it if it goes on a ballot. So, you know, whether it's this session or next session or whatever it is, it's ultimately going to happen. And, you know, it makes me happy as somebody who's dedicated almost my entire adult life to making sure that it does.
Well, one of the biggest challenges, I know, Jay, you have a question as well here in a comment. But one of the biggest challenges to getting this thing on the ballot, as we certainly discovered here in New Hampshire when we took a crack at getting a constitutional amendment on the ballot to declare peaceful independence, this was last year when this happened, was that, you know, that the system to some extent is controlled by these guys that love the federal government. A lot of them want to get passed. power in the federal government. They're using state government as a stepping stone to move up into, you know, the U.S. representative or U.S. senator or president or whatever. They got their eyes on the prize up there. And these people are standing in the way. They're going to do everything they possibly can. They're going to lie. They're going to cheat. And they're going to stand in the way of this this referendum that you guys are putting forward. Now, if it is true, and I know you're referring to the Survey USA study that was done last summer on the 60% number as far as support for this. If it is indeed true that there's that many people in Texas that support this, that can certainly change politicians' minds, because as we know, politicians love to run out in front of a parade and act like they were there the whole time. But are these politicians aware of the popularity, and what are you going to do to get through these old guard that are going to stand in the way?
Look, it's, you know, it's the politics game, right? I mean, there's no way to soft pedal it. And I don't believe in powdering people's butts either. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact of the matter is that, creating your own nation is a bare knuckle sport. And you have to do the things necessary to get the job done politically. And where these guys are concerned, you have to remember that their chief concern, every politician, is whether or not they're going to be reelected.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to, from a movement perspective, you have to create a climate, not at the Capitol, but where they live, in their home cities, in their neighborhoods, in their churches, in their civic organizations and everything else. You have to create the climate that convinces them that if they do not follow through with this, if they do not recognize the right of the people, which, you know, here in Texas, the Constitution is listed as an inalienable right to make this decision, you know, you have to make them fear for it. And then if they don't do it, then you have to give them concrete consequences at the ballot box, which requires old school political organizing. I mean, there's just... You know, it was Jefferson who said that you cannot be expected to be transported from tyranny to liberty on a feather bed. This is going to take work, and it's going to be hard, and at times it's going to be difficult, and some of us are going to have to pay a wicked, wicked price for it. But at the end of the day, the ability to just govern ourselves is worth every second, every dollar, every ounce of our energy that we have spent on it. The ability for the first time in our lives to be able to punch our own ticket and create our own destiny is worth any price that we have to pay.
Jay, what did you have to say to Daniel Miller here from Texas Nationalist Movement? His website, by the way, is tnm.me.
Hey, Daniel, this is an excellent call, and you have great information. I really enjoy it. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about food security. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about is if you've heard of the Texas Beef Initiative.
I'm not familiar specifically with the Texas Beef Initiative, but go ahead.
Well, TexasBeefInitiative.com, these guys do a pretty detailed podcast. They are farmers, ranchers, and they have basically a website where you can go and buy local beef. And it shows you, and most of there's a lot of Texas growers there, producers, and they use Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's the big thing. You can use other forms of payment too, but they're really into Bitcoin. So they're sort of creating this parallel economy. One of the things with getting out of the United States is you're no longer going to have farm subsidies. And I worked on a big subsidized farming outfit in Colorado a few years ago, and you know, the all of the horrible crops are subsidized, and the only way you can get a federal crop insurance is to use Monsanto growing practices. And so this is spraying all kinds of chemicals and this, that, and the other thing. And you have, you know, a lot of rural America that's somehow gets their dollars from farming, you know, big ag is going to be, you know, very much, you know, against this. Because the food is so heavily subsidized in America, we actually probably enjoy the cheapest food in the world, you know, based on essentially, you know, the economics of it.
Right.
If you just, you know, just look, I was just in a grocery store today, little town, my hometown, and our last night, and you could buy, you know, pork chops for $1.98 a pound, boneless pork chops. And I raise pigs, cows, and chickens. You can't feed a pig for $1.98 a pound. unless you're doing it government subsidized, you know, factory farm, and you end up with, you know, white meat, which is basically, you know, a result of anemic pigs. The comment I sort of had for you is, you know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, convincing is going to have to go along with these farmers that have been on a tit of the feds, mm-hmm. you know, for, you know, a couple generations now, at least since the 80s.
Now, wait. Are these all farmers or just the big ones?
Just a big corporate. Well, okay. Yes, this is many, many, many farmers are getting some sort of federal subsidy. There are mm-hmm. a few farmers I know here in New Hampshire that I've done a little business with. You know, and they're running like 35 cows, and they're getting a federal subsidy. They're getting a state subsidy. They're getting, you know.
So you're saying these are welfare queens. They're not going to want to get off.
Correct. Okay. Especially the big corporate farms that basically probably work most of the farm ground in Texas. You know, these guys are, you know, working, you know, thousands of acres each farmer. I worked on a farm that we were working about 3,000 acres, and we were one of the smallest ones. When I was in Colorado, there was these guys out of the Kalsovic family, and they did like 45,000 acres of wheat, basically.
Well, now, you know, yeah, they're going to get off the subsidies if Texas is independent, but doesn't that mean they're also going to be off the regulations? They're also going to be free of the USDA and, you know, all these other monsters.
And that's a big thing, but a lot of these guys really enjoy, you know, their, you ever go to a tractor pull? See those smoker tractors? You know, they got $500,000 into those things, and that's I always called it the farm subsidy class, the super stock diesel hot tractors or whatever, because these guys would brag about their, you know, $100,000 engine and their $50,000 turbo and, you know, $50,000 injector pump, and they'd be like, yeah, we got $500,000 into that tractor, and it's because all these, you know, subsidized farmers, almost all of them are driving Corvettes. They got brand new snowmobiles. All the guys I met and dealt with just had all the toys. They were a DEA agent.
I get what you're saying. I mean, do we really need these guys, or you think they're that important to convert, or what?
Well, the thing is they sort of rural areas, you know, sort of have a lot of influence on everybody there, and so all of that whole industry is going to be against this. But like going back to Texas Beef Initiative, you should really look into them, because if you're not buying local beef from a man, you can look him in the eye and shake his hand, you basically don't know what you're getting. This Texas Beef Initiative has a pretty good setup there in Texas. They're covering all Texas with local farms, and they're helping build this parallel economy. So when there is that transition to where getting these farmers off of farm subsidies is going to be getting, you know, getting a heroin addict off of heroin. It's really going to be hard, and they're going to be super resistant. And there could be a little disruption in food supply. But the way, you know, individually we have to prepare for that.
Leading to a question, though?
The only question was if you heard of Texas Beef Initiative.
Okay, I want to ask a question about this then.
Yeah.
You know, based on what you just heard from Jay, Daniel, what kind of interactions have you had with farmers there in Texas over this issue?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's no mistake that a tremendous amount of support for what we're doing comes out of rural areas, and particularly farmers and ranchers. You know, those guys here have been, you know, only next to energy producers, have been under direct attack by bad federal policy or federal regulation. So, you know, we're already working with those guys, and we see a lot of support from them. And a lot of that deals with some of the internal kind of politics here, you know, the governmental structure, the rural-urban divide that a lot of states our size have to contend with. But look, I also want to address this point too, because I think it bears mentioning. You know, we did a study a few years back where we wanted to determine what the actual imbalance was between you know, what Texas is getting from the federal government and what we're putting in. And so we did a calculation, and all in, essentially what we found was, accounting for every single dollar that comes into Texas, whether it's in those farm subsidies, whether it's in, you know, payroll contracts, whatever it is, Texas is overpaying somewhere between $103 to $160 billion annually into the federal system. So independence essentially means that money stays here. If we wanted to, we could replicate every single solitary program. We could hire every federal employee. We could duplicate every agency. We could do all those things. Now, that's ultimately not what's going to happen. you know, as we stabilize. But I think it's important to understand from a transitional standpoint that we can have, you know, minimal disruption. You know, you're talking about minimizing disruption. Now, that's not to say that we want to replicate everything the federal government does. I mean, what would the point of that be? But what it does is I think it begins, I think it's a point where we can begin the discussion of what we want a post-Texas to look like. And it gives us a starting point to say, okay, look, if this is indeed the case and we've got the federal government crushing our energy sector and our agriculture sector and, you know, pretty much every sector, if we're being honest, and, you know, part of that imbalance is related to these subsidies. Well, we've got an opportunity to take a look at that without disrupting the lives or, endangering our food security or any of those things. We have the opportunity to take our time and fix those things and do them in a way that really is congruent with what our values and ideals are here.
I also have one more question. If this process...
Oh, no, I'm sorry, sir. Limit one per customer.
Go ahead, Chris.
Love it. I saw when the USSR fell apart and Ukraine and Belarus and others exited, or Yugoslavia fell apart and you had the Balkanization, I guess, or the Balkans, and you have, you know, Serbia and Kosovo independence and Montenegro. So in Ukraine specifically, you see a big difference between West Ukraine and East Ukraine. And East Ukraine ended up with a lot of, like, ethnic Russians, I guess. People used to live there. Maybe with a Russian passport even. And so my question is, it became a country which, I guess, started to be torn apart by outside powers, influencing one or another way. And, you know, for they wanted good things, I suppose. You know, the EU wanted a closer association, for example. But at the end of the day, look what's going on. So my question is, if people within Texas, a city, let's say, or a region, wants to secede from Texas, then, and so on.
Like Austin.
Like Austin, yeah. Austin would probably keep Austin weird, you know, it was a big thing in the past.
But it's also known as being a hard left city in a not so lefty state.
So, like, or you see, for example, in Brexit, where you have the Scottish independence referendum to secede from the UK and maybe rejoin the EU even, or something to that effect. You know, the Scottish referendum.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that? And again, I'm just trying to understand.
Sure.
You know, from my perspective, I don't like violence, and so I hate when, like, the imperialism happens in the first place when you conquer, right? Genghis Khan conquered. But once it's, like, set up, there is something to be said about, like, people not fighting each other with these small wars, because now they're focusing on, like, cooperating on roads, and they have the same language, and they have the same everything. Like, you know, it seems they're better off by not competing. So that's why I'm coming from that perspective. But if we do the other way and we start decentralizing, I like that too. But then what happens if decentralization proceeds further and cities start saying...
Yeah, would Austin be able to break away from Texas under this sort of movement, do you think?
Well, you know, it gets down to, and I mean, this gets really down the rabbit hole when you start dealing with kind of secession theory. And you start talking about the remedial right of secession versus a primary right. But really and truly, you know, what you've got to remember is, you know, and this is true here in Texas, I'm sure it's true in many other states, you know, counties are administrative subdivisions of the state, okay? I mean, those counties were effectively created by the state. Cities, municipalities, are political subdivisions of the state. So, you know, they are, for all intents and purposes, part of Texas. So in that vein, you would be talking about true secession, and that's a whole other conversation that we need to have. What we're essentially talking about here is our states as sovereign political entities that created a union or voted to join a political and economic union, withdrawing their membership. And there is a very, very clear distinction, right? Mm-hmm. But before you can begin to have those conversations about cities, right, or, you know, counties, you've got to have first this conversation about whether or not Texas should stay ultimately in the Union. Now, you cited the example of Scotland, and I think it's important to remember that the Scottish independence debate had been raging for 800 years, right? Mm-hmm. It was 800 years between Acts of Union and when Scotland actually went to the polls to vote on the situation. And they are constructed very differently in the United Kingdom, right? And that is a whole other conversation. But it gets down to what I said a moment ago, which is, you know, again, to paraphrase Mark Twain, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. No two independence movements are exactly identical. So, you know, we have to kind of deal with the first issue, which is this relationship, this upside down relationship with the federal government. And then that next conversation can happen. You know, ultimately, I'm fairly certain that those people in those municipalities that we think of as sort of hard left are only hard left because so many of the voters have checked out because they don't really have an opportunity to make a real difference. One of the reasons that we see a tremendous amount of support across the spectrum, whether it's urban or rural, you know, we can go in and take the message of independence into those areas to those people that have effectively been disenfranchised from the system. I don't know what it's like there, but I can tell you municipal voter turnout in Texas is abysmal. And it's because so many voters have checked out and they have surrendered to neo-Marxists and progressives.
You mentioned Professor Matt Vortrup. Isn't he from Scotland?
Mm. He worked on the Scottish independence referendum.
Okay.
No, he's a professor at Coventry University in the UK and a visiting professor at Australian National University.
Yeah, because I know you kind of got your finger on a lot of the independence news all around the country. What's going on in Scotland? Are they pushing for another referendum right now? Do you know?
Yeah, you know, of course, Nicola Sturgeon was pushing pretty hard for a second referendum. And the reason is pretty simple. From a statistical standpoint, out of the very few countries over the last 100 years that have had independence referendums that lost on the first vote, half of those have gone back within 10 years and gotten an affirmative, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that whole issue has really blown up over there, and Nicola Sturgeon stepped down. So,
excellent. Daniel, thanks for spending a whole hour with us here tonight, man. And, of course, I'm sure we'll talk to you again about as things develop down there with the latest news in Texas of a potential vote on this. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
Check them out at tnm.me for the Texas Nationalist Movement. And we got more Free Talk Live coming up in Hour 3.
Do you ever get the feeling that the world is being held together with duct tape? Every day we're thrown some new meaningless drama in the fake news to distract us from the reality we're all about to face. Between the government trying to print their way out of debt, military conflicts, the disintegration of our most trusted institutions, and a looming food shortage, preparedness is no longer a choice. It's a necessity. You can trust My Patriot Supply. Our emergency food kits come packed with tasty meals, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit for each person in your family. Self-reliance is the only alternative to government food lines. Time is running out. Become ungovernable. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and save on dozens of different emergency food kits while you can. These kits are in stock, ship fast, and arrive in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com before the next crisis strikes. MyPatriotSupply.com.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.